Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addisk, bringing you opinion, commentary on today's economic and political events on this very fine and wonderful Wednesday afternoon, November 27th, 2013, one day before Turkey Day. And hope everybody's had their turkey and hope power is on and restored for everyone here in central Pennsylvania. But interesting day, quiet day in the markets. I guess that's not too interesting. I didn't think gold would do much this week. Certainly all the focus has been on the stock markets, and very little attention is being made to gold. You know, so gold is just flopping around, just floundering. Gold down 360 today at $1,239. You have silver down 11 cents today at $1,980. And you have platinum down $23, almost 1.75% at $1,358. Palladium down $1.721. The USDX today trading 0.09 to the up, 80.73. And they did a little bit of a number today on crude oil, down 1.35, 92.33, probably a late reaction to the Iraqi handshake and their enrichment of nuclear fusion, I suppose. And what?
Fuel.
Fuel?
Yes.
Fuel
fusion. Enrichment of nuclear fuel or whatever. Mm-hmm.
And so, which really surprises me, because I thought when they were first doing the deal in Geneva and so forth that, you know, you'd probably see crude oil at least break 90 into the 80s, but that really isn't happening. So we'll see if it does in a little bit here in the next couple of weeks or so forth. But we've already talked about how higher heating costs and everything through this winter, so I highly unlikely that would be affected. Those prices have already been set. The Dow and the S&P again hit another record closing high. You have the Dow up 24 points at 16,097. The NASDAQ up 27 at 4,044. And the S&P up 4.5 at 1,807. The 10-year yield today, 0.04, up at 2.74 on the 10-year yield. So I guess there's a lot of good economic news today. The reports coming out saying that workers are in less of danger of being laid off. The number of Americans seeking unemployment benefits dropped 10,000 last week. to a seasonally adjusted 316, the Labor Department said. And, of course, the stock market, again, is at record levels. And, of course, the Fed is buying $85 billion in bonds every month to keep long-term interest rates low, making bonds less attractive than stocks for investors. And, of course, this past year we've seen more individual investors come into the stock market, and hopefully some of them were smart enough to go into Bitcoin. That traded over 1,000 today.
Really?
Yes. You know, get your, hey, anything that involves a criminal activity, invest. You know.
It's like investing in Congress. We call it political campaign contributions, but it's the same idea. I'm thinking about marketing some tulip bulbs, Melody, and I think it's been done before, and I'm thinking maybe we could give Bitcoin a run for its money with tulip bulbs.
Thanks.
What do you think? Maybe.
Well, how about we drop some gold dust on top of those tulip bulbs?
Well, then I probably wouldn't want to sell them.
No. Well, but you know what I found interesting? Here, tomorrow we know Black Friday. We talk about Black Friday. And there's a lot of stuff going around on the internet. Shoppers are going to boycott Black Thursday. A lot of shoppers seem to be a little upset that the stores are opening on Thanksgiving. And there's a bunch of them that are wearing signs that says, because I believe in family, I pledge to not shop on Thanksgiving. If I'm shopping, someone else is working and not spending time with their family. Everyone deserves a holiday. And, of course, we've been talking about this for a little bit. Black Friday morphed into Black Thursday. And you have your big retailers. You have Kmart. They're planning to kick Thanksgiving Day off. Their stores are opening at 6 a.m. And they're going to remain open for 41 hours straight. The Toys R Us, Walmart. You also have Best Buy. You have Macy's. They're all looking to open up on Thanksgiving Day and continue all the way through. So people seem to be a little disappointed in these retailers, thinking that they're taking away family time. Are they missing the boat? Are they missing the big picture? Is it more? Should they be a little bit more
sensitive to the idea of a holiday?
A little more sensitive to, you know, the greediness of the corporations opening up a day before, and the real problems that there are. Is there a reason why they're opening up on Thursday?
Sure.
Is the economy that bad that they need that extra day in order to get things started, jump started, to go into the holiday season? So people are looking at it as retailers are infringing on family time, but is it really something more than that?
Well, I think you're right about what you're seeing is evidence of increased competition. If everybody else is going to open on Friday, then if I opened on Thursday, I might be able to get a bunch of business on Thursday and keep my competitors from getting it on Friday. And it may be that they are so desperate. All right? And I'm not saying that the retailers are necessarily desperate, but you know, there is a point. Where do you draw the line between greed and desperation? There's a point to this that really does imply that there's some desperation out here. We'll sell on Thanksgiving, we'll sell on Christmas, we'll sell on the day World War III begins. It doesn't matter. We'll sell, folks. You got the money, we got the time. Come on down, buy something. That's kind of the attitude, and it is unseemly on holidays. If we're going to do this on Thanksgiving, we'll be doing it on Christmas and Christmas Eve and Christmas Day and New Year's Day. And there's a point in time where, you know, maybe there's things more important than commerce. And family is one of them. And when you look at it, I think one of the people you were reading from, one of the people in the article you were reading from, they point out that shopping on Thanksgiving Day is not merely detract. If I'm going to go shopping on Thanksgiving Day, well, if I want to go shopping on Thanksgiving Day, I guess that's okay. All right, there's nothing necessarily wrong with that, but you got to realize that when I'm shopping, that I'm not spending Thanksgiving with a family. All right, that's one thing. We're moving away from that. We're moving away from that family situation in order to engage in commerce. but also by shopping, I create circumstances where people who might rather be with their family for Thanksgiving, they can't because they have to work. All right? Now, I bet that a lot of people are just volunteering. A lot of them are probably sitting back and saying, oh, I'm sorry, I can't be with you to this week, this Thanksgiving, family, because I have to work. And probably working for 2 hours and then going out and hitting the bars or whatever. It's a good excuse to avoid, depending on how your family is. Not everyone is all that enthused. I mean, we got this Norman Rockwell image about, well, we're going to have that big turkey and we're going to sit around the family. And I've had that. I've had that. I can remember it clearly with my grandmother and the rest of it, and I miss it.
Yes.
All right. But then there's the reality of some of our family relationships aren't quite Norman Rockwell, are they? You know, and maybe it'd be just as, I'd rather be working, making a few dollars, than listening to Uncle Bob tell us the story about whatever. Heard it from the third for the 33rd time. I don't need to hear it again. It's hard to say. It's a peculiar thing, but I kind of hope that it doesn't work. I hope that the retailers who are trying to sell on Thanksgiving, I hope it's a bust for them. Mm. They can sell on Friday and Saturday, and if they need to sell on Sunday, there's plenty of other days. There's just something a little bit unseemly about doing this.
You know, enough is enough. However, I'll defend these stores, because their competition now is online, where you can shop 24 hours a day.
True.
All year long. So I don't think it's so much that you're competing with the other big chain down the street, but perhaps it's more on the internet. And I have seen articles and so forth how a lot of these stores are trying to fight, like Amazon, with trying to match and beating their prices and different shipping options and so forth. So I mean, certainly Amazon has taken a big bite out of their bottom lines, but it just goes to show also, because of that, there isn't enough to go around. They're all fighting for something.
Yeah, I know.
Again, it's another sign of desperation.
And you know, you may be correct about that, and the desperation may not be so much that the market isn't good as it is that they are being replaced by an internet market.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right. You know, if I want to go shopping on Thursday, all right, fire up the car. By the time you drive down there, find a place to park, walk around there. Said, on the other hand, I can pull up to my computer terminal and I can be at Amazon in a matter of just, you know, 60 seconds. And there I am, and I can purchase whatever I want. Now, I can't have it right this moment the same way I might at the store. But if I'm willing to wait a couple of days, what the heck? And maybe get a better deal. So maybe that's what these retailers are fighting against. Maybe they're not fighting each other so much as the growth of the internet.
Perhaps.
Yep.
But then again, you also have a lot of your retailers. I mean, even Walmart, they all have online websites. But I just don't think people are apt to go to their websites like they are Amazon.
No, I agree.
So they have the presence on the internet, but it's just not a commonplace for people to go to. I go to Amazon first before I go anyplace else.
And that's partly because you're going to have a higher overhead with any brick and mortar store.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, I don't think they can compete with Amazon.
Well, they're going to try. They're fighting this year.
I know they're trying, but what I'm trying to say is they can't have lower prices. I don't think they can easily have lower prices on the internet than they have in their own stores, right? You can't buy a product, it's $100 at the store, but it's only $90 on the store website in order to compete with Amazon.
Well, this is the first time they're doing. Stores are doing things like matching the lower prices on Amazon. They're offering the same discounts in stores as on their websites. So
that's a pretty good deal.
Mm-hmm.
That's a pretty good deal because you have the opportunity to pick up the product today. If you could get the same price, if I could get the same price from a local store, if I knew I could get the same price at a local store as I could get from Amazon, and I knew I could get whatever it is that I have a hankering to buy right now at the local store, I'd probably do business with that local store. But can the local store continue to stay in business if I'm going over there to pay Amazon prices? There's the question.
And I still believe a large part is just the economy, folks.
Well, it's all of it.
It's the economy, and people are looking to save a penny.
Yeah.
They are looking for the cheapest way out in order to, and you know, it really is. And here we are going to the holidays already. We've been talking about shopping, the retailers, Black Friday for how long now? A month already? And it's the focus is on all buy. You talk about consumers versus producers. And here's just a simple sign of it. And here's another interesting thing. Oklahoma City. For the first time in 70 years, Oklahoma residents can legally enjoy Black Friday mega deals after legislators repealed parts of a law that prohibited retailers from selling items for less than they paid. Low-price retail events like Black Friday, in which retailers deeply discounted items to attract shoppers, were technically illegal because there was a law in 1941 that required retailers to sell products at least 6% more than invoice cost. And, of course, this was ignored by retailers, and it was rarely ever enforced. But the law led to some antitrust lawsuits and a 2011 opinion from the state attorneys general that Black Friday and other low-price sales events are, even if temporary, illegal in Oklahoma. So you had one senator there that pushed for the change this year and acknowledges most Oklahoma shoppers were probably never aware of it, that this law existed. Pardon? Yes, Al?
Melody, can you hear me all right? Can you hear me all right?
Now I can.
Can you hear me all right?
Yes.
Well, the reason I'm wondering is I've had about 10 dropouts.
Yes.
You're talking, and I don't hear what you're saying exactly. And I'm not sure whether it's on your end or whether it's... Is it coming? Does Frank hear him also? Does Frank also hear the dropouts, or is it only at my end?
Let me finish out. You are dropping out, and I'll just go ahead and continue. We're just about a break now, unless Frank wants to start the break early. We'll finish up with this Oklahoma City, and then we can reconnect. But you certainly are breaking up.
Okay, then I think what I'll do is I'm going to hang up right now. You can continue with the program, and Frank, you can just call me. Frank, you call me directly rather than through Melody. Is that all right? Let's try it.
So we were talking about the Oklahoma City and how they reversed the ruling from a 1941 law that required retailers to sell products for at least 6% more than invoice cost. Lots of times we talk about on the program about a lot of my competitors, they'll do lost leads. They'll take a loss on a product in order just to get your name and phone number so that and maybe sell you something to where they might lose a little bit. They have your name, they have your number, and then they'll call you, and they'll just eventually rake you over the coals to get you to buy something else, and then you'll pay a much, much higher price. So that ruling is interesting. What I found interesting about it is it was brought current to 2011. I don't have any information on the antitrust lawsuit as to... the outcome and who was involved, but to think that it brought interest to where there was antitrust lawsuits in 2011 certainly would be interesting to find out and to see how that has led. So competition is a good thing, and pricing is a good thing. We see it in my business. We see it in gold and silver. It used to be all about pricing. We all had the same product, and we competed and provided a great product. Products are good. It isn't the product that was bad. It was the commissions that were being charged and the misinformation on the products that have been distorted on how they would perform in a portfolio. And we'll have to have an education on coins here in the very near future. Maybe during the month of December we'll talk about that. And because there's great coins and product out there to be purchased, and you can't be listen to a lot of these guys who have a special agenda. And I think I do hear the music in the background, so we'll go ahead and take a break. Hopefully we'll reconnect with Alfred, and thank you for joining us.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in an untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate in those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad-spectrum immune-boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Or take your chances with the bad boys. Call Apothecary Herbs toll-free, 866-229-3663, or online, thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here at Financial Survival with Melody Cederstrom, and the program is brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver and produced by Frank at American Voice Radio. And we weren't absolutely certain if we were on or not on for a moment or two here during the commercial break, and I was beginning to feel like the turkey thing. Uh-oh.
You're just that family member we didn't... It
was
one of those family members.
Yeah, it was one of those. It was like Thanksgiving with a family. I didn't really want to see these people. But in any case, we are on now, so everything's worked out. And I think maybe we're doing better in terms of sound quality now and not having dropouts, although it remains to be seen. So
well,
what's next, Mel?
Right away, we still want to extend the special for today. We had a major power outage here in central Pennsylvania. Our power seems to be up and going, but we're still supposed to get some ice later on today, so we might have another mishap. But we will return calls, just leave messages if our phones seem to be down. We're extending the $20 gold piece in Mint State 62. It'd either be a Liberty or a Saint, where you receive a free silver eagle and also free shipping. And those prices are almost just pretty much wholesale. And I don't have 100 of them at that price, and I don't have 50. I do have a few left. So if you're interested, give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. And of office hours during the holiday, we will do a live program on Friday. I will return calls on Friday, but most of my wholesalers are gone until the 2nd of December, which is Monday. So they're closed, and so depending on what you're looking to purchase, we might be able to lock in your prices. So I will return calls on Friday. We'll have a live program on Friday. It will be, you know, business as usual. So,
business as usual. What's next, Melody?
They can email us at discountgoldandsilver@yahoo.com, discountgoldandsilver@yahoo.com. Visit our website, dgscoins.com. That's discountgoldsilver, dgscoins.com. So let's get moving. Let's get off of Black Friday and let's move on to something about, you know, Obama is one of your favorite people.
Obama is one of my favorite people.
Mm-hmm.
I've actually seen Obama in my dreams, although it's been a long time. I saw him when he was first elected.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I know. It was a strange situation. I had two dreams. He's the only president I've ever dreamed about. And I had two dreams, and in both instances, I was trying to talk to him. And he was just sitting there grinning, and he wouldn't pay any attention to anything I had to say. And I've never had a dream about a president before. It was a very strange situation. Still remember it. I don't know what to make of it. You know, blah, blah, blah. But I was trying to explain things that I thought, and he just grinned and laughed. He just paid no attention to whatever it was I had to say. So, I have an account to settle with Obama. All right? Because he wouldn't listen to me when I'm speaking in my dreams. So, an account. Here's Obama's close. This is from the Washington Times. Obama's call to close the Vatican embassy is slap in the face to Roman Catholics. The Obama administration, in what's been called an egregious slap in the face to the Vatican, has moved to shut down the U.S. embassy to the Holy See, a freestanding facility, and relocate offices onto the grounds of the larger American embassy in Italy. The new offices will be in a separate building. And while U.S. officials are touting the relocation as a security measure, that's a cautionary reaction to last year's attack on America's facility in Benghazi. Several former American envoys are raising the red flag. Former U.S. Ambassador James Nicholson reported in the National Catholic Reporter, he said, it's a massive downgrade of U.S. Vatican ties. It's turning this embassy into a stepchild of the embassy to Italy. The Holy See is a pivot point for international affairs and a major listening post for the United States. And it's an insult to American Catholics and to the Vatican. So, we're closing down. Obama has decided to shut down the embassy that's located at the Vatican in Italy. And you understand that the Vatican is a separate country. It has a separate political status. And it's not just like going to the local church. You understand? It has a separate political status. And therefore, there are unique embassies that are associated within the Vatican property. And the United States had one, and now they're shutting it down. So the question here, if Obama's shutting down the embassy to the Holy See, to the Vatican, he's going to alienate some Catholics. And the question then is Obama that inept as a politician? Is this happening by accident because Obama didn't realize that he would alienate some Catholics if you shut down the U.S. embassy to the Vatican? Is he that inept, or does he really intend to insult the Catholics? Is that what Obama's doing? If Obama quickly revokes his order to close the U.S. embassy at the Vatican, we can assume he's merely inept. It's one of those situations you make a mistake and you say, uh-oh, we can't make the Catholics mad, so better rescind the order to close the embassy at the Vatican. If he reacts quickly, then we can assume he's merely inept. But if Obama does not quickly revoke his order to close the U.S. embassy at the Vatican, we have to assume that Obama really intends to insult the Catholics and is not concerned about Catholic support for the Democrat Party in the 2014 election. Now, Catholics are usually a big chunk of the Democrat base. And if Obama is really willing to alienate that portion of the Democrat base, he's going to be hurting the Democratic Party. You have to sit back and say, this is strange. Why would Obama appear to be indifferent to the best interests of the Democratic Party? What could motivate Obama to betray even his own political party's interests? Obama may be marching to the beat of some previously unrecognized drummer. If so, some of the Democrat Party may be persuaded to unite with the Republican Party to impeach or otherwise remove Mr. Obama from the White House. I mean, if he's not there to help the Democrats, he can't count on the Democrats to be there to help him. What do you think's going to happen, Melody?
Why would we have an embassy there anyway?
Well, it's, I don't know. Maybe they get,
as far as these people who want to remove religion from government, why would you have... Well, I know. Well, I understand that, but...
We have, why do we have an embassy at, who knows, any of the little foreign countries you can name?
And it's supposed to be it's the wealthiest country in the world, too.
Yeah, that may be.
I believe.
Other than Rothschildville.
Rothschildville. So, yeah. I mean, my point is, why would, they try to remove religion from government, why would we have an embassy in the Vatican?
Well, it may be the former ambassador, he said that the Vatican is a major listening post for the United States. You learn a lot at the Vatican. They have people all over. They've got, the Catholic Church is global, and they accumulate information. And
confessions are really not...
It may be that NASA, the National Security Agency, is trying to wire the confession booths at the Catholic Churches. And maybe the Catholic Church has rebuffed that. Maybe they've said, no, you can't record what's being said in the confession booths. And therefore, the Obama, he said, well, we're going to pull our embassy out of the Vatican. It's just, it's a strange thing. And part of the report here, Mr. Nicholson, again, the former ambassador, he said his views were endorsed by former envoys, and they mentioned half a dozen people. Also called the justification for closing the existing facility a smokescreen. He said, we're not a pauper nation. If we want a secure embassy, we can certainly have one. Moreover, the existing facility has state-of-the-art security. Government says, oh, we're moving the embassy over to the Italian government, the main embassy that we deal with the Italian government for security reasons. And the man who's actually been an ambassador to the Catholic, to the Vatican, he said, no, wait a second. We already have top-notch security there. We are secure, so that excuse is not valid. So what is really going on here? Is Obama, is he striking out against people of faith?
So did you didn't say that the embassy at the Vatican was used as the embassy for Italy.
No, they've got a separate.
Italy
is one country, and the Vatican is another one.
Well, I understand
what they're trying to do is move the embassy from the Vatican to the embassy for Italy. All right, they're abandoning. They're essentially not in this. Well, I won't. It's not true to say that they don't recognize the Vatican, but they are certainly diminishing. So what is this? Again, this is a strange political move. I can't see where is the payoff for Obama in this particular decision. What does he hope to gain? And I can't imagine what that is. I can't easily imagine what that is. I mean, unless he's got an axe to grind with religion in general or the Catholic Church in particular, what's his objective here? He could just as easily have left that embassy go without alienating Catholics and chose not to do so. Again, is he that dumb, or does he have some values that we're not aware of? Melody?
Well, there's a lot of things going on in the Catholic Church, but I certainly I don't have an answer for that one.
Well, nobody does. It's just one of those. It's just a strange. Well, Obama may, he has an answer for it because he knows why he did this. But it is strange. Why do people, why do politicians intentionally jeopardize their own political base? That makes no, that is not easily understood. And, you know, he's, it's not as if Obama's heading and the Democratic Party are heading for a certain victory in 2014. With Obamacare hanging around their necks, hard to say what, how many seats they're going to win. And here we are now alienating Catholics. Then that does not bode well for the Democrats. So, what else do we have, Melody? How about inside the Beltway? Americans anticipate another government shutdown in 49 days. This is from the Washington Times. 49 days to another shutdown.
I don't think they'll have a shutdown.
As serious as the year 2000 when everything was going to collapse. Remember, we were going to have everything was going to collapse. They were going to have the computers were all going to fold up and die. And they never did. Hard to say, but in the Washington Times, a disconcerting reminder, the federal government is only funded for the next 49 days. I don't find that disconcerting. I look at it and say, gee, wouldn't that be something if
I thought Boehner already came out and said they're going to keep funding the government.
Well, of course they're going to keep
funding. There wouldn't be a shutdown.
Nevertheless, this is like watching little horror films on TV at night. Ooh, the boogeyman is going to get you. It's not the boogeyman. It's just the federal government. They will get us. They'll get us all. The money runs out exactly 7 weeks from Wednesday on January 15th, to be exact. But no one is thinking about it as holiday time bustles in. Or are they? The public. This is just another one of these. Apparently, they have to put so many pages of news out in order to justify however many pages of advertising where they make their actual money. And this is one of those articles where you wonder, is this significant? The public is poised for the worst, apparently. 70% of Americans now believe it is likely that the government will shut down again. That's according to a Harris poll released on Tuesday. Republicans are more apt than Democrats to agree with this, 79% to 64%. 79% of Republicans think we might shut down on January 15th. 64% of Democrats think so. This reminds me a little bit of, is the glass half empty or half full? The Republicans see this as half full and the Democrats see it as half empty. In any case, no one has forgotten that pesky debt ceiling either. 50% of the respondents say it should not be raised again, while one quarter disagree. Oh, while another government shutdown appears likely to Americans, defaulting does not. Almost half Americans, 54%, say it is not likely that the government will default and not raise the debt ceiling, while one-third said it is likely that the U.S. will default. 19% are not sure. That doesn't say how many have no clue. We should also have no clue. And then we would have maybe a little more honest statistics. To default or not to default, that is the question. All right, is the government going to default on the debt? Or more precisely, the real question may be to default right now or default at some later date. Maybe that's the real question. Because the debt is too great to ever be repaid in full. And therefore, the government is going to default. It has to. It can't pay the debt. Now, it's probably not going to default within the next 49 days. I don't expect a default by January 15th. But quite probably will default within the next 49 months. And it's conceivable it might even default within the next 49 weeks. The debt is too great to be repaid. Sooner or later, it's going to be. The question is not if we will default on the debt. The question is, when do we default on the debt? So, what do you think, Melody? Are we going to default on the debt in the next 49 days, or will it take a little longer?
I think it'll take a little bit longer. But you never know. You never know what one event could happen. And that's, you know, and I don't believe anyone knows the day and the time. And when it happens, it will happen very quickly. It will happen overnight. And you best be prepared.
True story.
You won't have time to gather your items.
What are we doing? Taking another break already? Boy, the time is flying right by. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. I'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Countries have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a KU band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click Satellite System.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here at Financial Survival with my co-host, Melody Cederstrom. We have a caller, Wayne, from Texas. What up, Wayne?
Hey, Al. How's it going?
Not bad.
Well, that's good. That's good.
Getting ready for a big Thanksgiving?
I wanted to run by you. First up, a comment on the Black Friday discussion. I think there's also a dual purpose here because, in my estimation, I believe a lot of these stores are now either controlled or owned outright by foreign interests who care nothing about our traditions and holidays. And I think it's just another backdoor way to devalue another uniquely American holiday. And there's very few times a year anymore where families can get together for some uninterrupted time for a few hours even. And now they've even invaded that. So I think there's like a dual-edged sword here. Mm-hmm.
So we're going to have our quality time down at Walmart in the future. Is that what's going to happen with the... Instead of sitting around together at the table, we're all going to go, the family that shops together stays together. Is that where we're headed, Wayne?
Well, I think it could be kind of like, the bar scene at in the Star Wars movie, going to Walmart, you know, seeing what kind of creatures are down there. But that could be pretty entertaining, I guess. So.
I guess.
But you do have a good point there, Wayne, how these corporations, how these retailers are owned by, you know, foreign entities. And certainly they have no ties to anything here in the state. So,
well, it's not
point.
Just a matter of being owned by foreign entities. It's also a question of whether they become multinational corporations. And at that point, their loyalty to any nation is minimal. I mean, once the corporation becomes multinational, To whose what nation do they hold? Do they pledge allegiance to?
They pledge allegiance to the country that charges the least amount of tax.
They pledge allegiance perhaps to a central bank or the IMF or the Bank of International Settlements or whatever. But in any case, Wayne, what else you got for us?
Yeah, I could just see our Chinese friends sitting down with the Walmart executive saying, hey, boys, your sales are down. You need to figure out some creative ways to get it back up there. And
one of the ways they could increase the profit margin at Walmart would be probably to import Chinese laborers. Right? Given the strong relationship between Walmart and China, maybe they could fire their American employees and put some Chinese employees in there who will work for just a couple bucks a day.
Figure that's next.
Or that profit margin. What else, Wayne?
Hey, Al, the other question I had was regarding the Obamacare scenario. And, we've seen, as this thing is unfolding, a lot of constitutional issues and a lot of people in high places of government really violating their oath of office, et cetera, et cetera. And what I was just kind of curious, I know in some of your investigation, are you along the same lines maybe that I am, that well, we see a lot of independent associations spring up that are created to offer an alternative to the Obamacare scenario where a lot of us are getting whacked with huge premiums now, might be able to take advantage of that situation. And some of these doctors that are getting out of the business on that side of it could be wanting to thumb their nose at the establishment and say, hey, we're going to do our own thing and have a lot of private contracts and all that.
I recognize that possibility, but it's going to be difficult. I mean, I don't believe that we will see alternatives to Obamacare that are going to grow to any degree. It may be that a local community might have 5 or 10 or 20 people. It might be associated in some kind of a health, mutual health, institution where they take care of themselves. I don't know, but Obamacare can't take the competition, and I would guess that if any competition develops that tries to stay outside of Obamacare, the government's going to try to clamp down on that pretty hard. I doubt that they're going to allow it to take place. It may, people will try it, but I wouldn't expect it to succeed for more than a year or two if Obamacare manages to survive.
Yeah, I see. Okay, so any other alternative strategies you see on the possible drawing board that, again, you've looked
take
at?
Take Obamacare down. I think the Democrats would be glad to see the end of it. It needs to be stopped, and I think it's going to collapse under its own weight before this is all over, although it may be another year before that happens. I think this thing is such a mess and such a debacle that it's one of the dumbest things we may have ever seen in American politics. And before this is done, people are going to refer to Obamacare. 20 years from now, people are going to come up with a new proposal, and somebody, don't give me, that's just more Obamacare. It may be one of the longest running gags in American politics, but it won't necessarily start. It's not quite at that point yet, but it may get that way.
I see. Okay, I just wanted to run a couple things here. So, all right, thanks a lot.
Appreciate your call, Wayne. Thank you. Here we got something from Americans Inside the Beltway. This is from the Washington Times. Americans anticipate. Whoops, already did that. Sorry. I'm looking for the next one. Here's the one I wanted. New York Times. International Monetary Fund shifts its approach to bailouts. Okay, now this is interesting because there are implications here. The International Monetary Fund, convinced that Europe erred in forcing debtor countries like Greece and Portugal to bear nearly all of the pain of recovery on their own, is pushing for a plan that would impose those upfront losses on bondholders the next time a country in the euro area requests a bailout. What do they mean by this? We're talking about debtor countries. It says the International Monetary Fund convinced that Europe erred in forcing debtor countries like Greece and Portugal to bear nearly all the pain of recovery on their own. And they kind of say this is a problem. But I'm looking at this and I'm saying, are we really talking about debtor countries or are we talking about debtor governments? That's point one. And I think we're talking about debtor governments, and they're saying that the IMF is pushing hard, for a plan that would impose upfront losses on bondholders. Now, who do you suppose they mean by bondholders, Melody?
Who do you mean?
Well, I mean the bondholders that the IMF is saying, oh, we got to get the bondholders to take losses on these debts. We're talking about the people, the private institutions, and even foreign governments who loaned money to the debtor countries. That's the term they use, and I would say to the debtor governments. Now, this is interesting. It goes on, it says, scarred by its role in misjudging the depth of the Greek recession and rebuffed in its attempts to get European governments to write down their Greek loans, the International Monetary Fund is advocating a more aggressive approach to debt restructuring to try to ease the rigors of German-style austerity. By debt restructuring, they mean canceling the debt. Repudiating the debt. In other words, if I loan $10 million to Greece and the government was going to restructure my loan, what it means is I would only get $8 million back, or maybe $6 million. Or maybe my loan was scheduled and Greece had to repay me in the next 90 days. And instead the loan was restructured where I wouldn't be paid for 5 years, or maybe 10. But the net result is the creditor who loaned the money to the government in the first place is going to take, they're going to go through debt restructuring, and they are going to lose part of their loan. Indeed, despite tough talk on both sides of the Atlantic about making bond investors, the creditors make the bond investors share in the cost of bailouts with taxpayers, the world's largest economies seem to have accepted the dire warnings advanced by investors in banking and bankers that the International Monetary Fund's proposed new approach would badly roil still fragile credit markets in Europe. So we can't just impose the debt on the bondholders, because if we do, what's the bondholders, once they do that as official policy and say, look, if you lend money to some country like Greece or Portugal or even the United States, and the United States, for example, can't pay its debt, well, then you have to agree that you're not going to get paid. You have to go along. Even though you have a bond, you're going to have to agree that you're not going to be paid. And if you do that, how many people are going to lend money to these governments? There has to be, the government has to operate on the presumption that it will pay all of its bonds, and increasingly that presumption is seen to be false. The fund has been bruised and abused, according to said Susan Shadler, talking about the International Monetary Fund, a former IMF economist and author of a recent paper that argues the fund broke its own rules in lending to near-bankrupt Greece. But in the end, there's no trade-off between austerity and debt restructuring. You have to do both. What does Ms. Shadler mean that there's no trade-off between austerity, number one, and debt restructuring, number two? Ultimately, in my opinion, she means what can't be paid won't be paid. That's the first thing she means. But some effort must be made to pay off some of the debt. Austerity means that the people of the debtor government, the people living under in the country where we have a debtor government, they have to accept paying higher taxes, and they have to accept a lower standard of living as a consequence of allowing their government to go too deeply into debt. And there's a certain amount of justification for that, but the point I'm trying to get across is austerity means the people have to pay higher taxes, the people have to accept a lower standard of living because the government went too deeply into debt. Austerity. Debt restructuring, as we explained already, means that those who loaned to the debtor governments have to accept losing some or all of their principal. So who wins? Who wins if we have both austerity, which means the people have to pay higher taxes and take a lower standard of living, and debt restructuring, which means that the creditors don't get their money back, who is winning? And the answer is the debtor governments. By virtue of going deeper and deeper into debt, they raise taxes on the people and refuse to pay debts due to creditors. The governments grow more powerful by going deeper into debt. They grow more powerful at the expense
of the people who will be forced to pay this debt back in the form of taxes and or austerity. They'll go into a lower standard of living, or the creditors. People, creditors pay, government prospers. Do you see what I'm trying to say here, Melody? Does it make any sense?
Absolutely it does.
Good.
Absolutely.
And it just struck me as interesting. No one is saying the government's got to come up with the money. You know, we've got a government right now. Our government is so deeply in debt that it's arguable that it will never be able to repay the debt, and the government doesn't care. The government sits back and says, well, if push comes to shove, we'll just raise taxes on all the peons out there in TV land. Or, if the debt gets too big, we'll just repudiate the debt of money we owe the rest of the peons, the rest of the fools who loaned us money in the first place. Yeah? But the truth is, the government is not at a loss for assets. The government owns things. The national government owns roughly half of the land that's west of the Mississippi. The land in states like California and Alaska and Oregon and Washington, much of it, in some states, most of it, is owned by the federal government. If I have property that I own and I'm so deep in debt that I can't make good on my loans, guess what's going to happen? Somebody's going to come up and they'll say, well, Al, you got that lot over there at the corner of 17th and Vine. We can probably get $50,000 for that lot. That's a nice little piece of property, and then you can use that to pay off your creditors. And the government says, oh, well, we can't sell any government property. You know, all we can do here is we'll just have to raise taxes on all the morons out there in TV land. That's their solution. And when I'm saying, wait a second, why not call the government and say, look, you know, just like ordinary people, if you've got to liquidate some of your assets, you've got to liquidate some of your assets to make good on the debt. And that's not a serious consideration. There's only two solutions to the government's debt problem. And one of them is raise taxes on the peons. And the other one is repudiate the debt where you don't have to pay back the creditors. But at no point, who's talking about taking a cut in government pay? Which one of the congressmen are saying, gee, we've screwed things up so bad that I guess we ought to cut our pay in half? Maybe we should cut our pensions in half. Maybe we should just have Social Security like everybody else in this country. Is anyone suggesting that to make good on government's debt? I don't think so. If they are, I haven't heard about it. This article where I was reading from previously just illustrates, if you read it closely, they've got two solutions for government debt. And one is austerity from the people, and one is a repudiation of debt for the creditors. Not right. It's not right, folks. I'm not sure how we're going to resolve it and what we're going to do about it. But you need to recognize it. You know, the first step in the solution of any problem is diagnosis. If you can diagnose the problem accurately, you can solve almost any problem you're going to encounter. But if you can't diagnose the problem, you are in deep trouble. Our next problem, Melody, is running out of time. Got about 10 seconds till we have to end the program. So I want to thank everyone for listening. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom at Financial Survival. We will be back on Friday. Have a happy Thanksgiving, and between now and Thanksgiving and Friday, I hope the good Lord blesses each and every one of us, you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
Happy Thanksgiving, everyone.
Happy Bye-bye. Thanksgiving. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Payment fast. And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me.